Fred Film Radio from the 76th Venice International Film Festival, Italy.
Hello, as you hear, I have already a guest here. I'm Angelo Cerbi from Fred Film Radio from the Venice Festival. I'm really glad to have here Mr. Craig Caton. Good afternoon.
Hi.
From the New York Film Academy of Los Angeles and the Master of Special Effects.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Well, you know, you are.
We know you.
Millions of people saw films that you work in, like E.T. or like in Jurassic Park or Batman Begins. So it's really a pleasure for me to have you here. You are in Venice because you're holding like a masterclass for the at the Giornata degli Autori.
Yeah,
and you are specializing in special effects and 3D animation.
Yes,
you started many, many years ago.
A bunch. 1980.
We are 2019. Which is the best invention that helped your work, technically speaking?
I think the computer.
I hate to say it,
but it was the computer. Well, I mean, you know, when I first started, there were like some home computers and stuff, but none of the industry was being done digital or anything. Mm-hmm. And then over the years, we just watched them get better and better, and then eventually they took over, which is fine because now. Truly, our imagination is the only limit now. If you can think about it, we can create it. So that's pretty cool.
I wanted to ask you about E.T. because, you know, E.T. is like a seminal film for tons of people.
Yeah.
Still is, actually.
Wow.
Hasn't grown. Well, it got hold a little bit, but not that much.
Yeah.
How was your work on that film? So what was your job, what your aim?
Well, that's a sad story. I was merely a lab assistant on the actual filming of that, but it wasn't later that I later on I became very involved. I was actually on Jurassic Park.
Oh, did you start?
Yeah, I was working on Jurassic Park, and I was on stage minding my own business. By the way, okay, I wasn't causing trouble like I normally am. Uh-huh. And this woman comes in, and Spielberg's talking to her, and then Steven's pointing at me. And the next thing I know, she's there, and she's saying, come with me. And I go, I thought she was a lawyer, and I was in some kind of trouble or something.
Be fired or something.
But but she led me over to Steven Spielberg's Amblin bungalow at Universal Studios, and inside there was this giant wooden crate, identical to the crate that the Ark of the Covenant is in their Lost Ark, because it was made by the same guy. And she gives me a screw gun and tells me to open the box. Okay. And so I open the box, and when I open the lid, inside is E.T. And she says, his finger light is burned out. Can you replace his light bulb? And I go, yeah. So I took him home, and I took apart the finger apart. And I found out that his finger light was a brake light from a 1970s Dodge car. So that was like $4, and I could get two of those lights, right? So I go to the auto store, get two of those bulbs, come back, replace it, glue the skin back on, and I take it back. And the woman from Amblin says, how much do you want? And I said, I don't know, $40? And she goes, are you kidding me? And I go, well, what? It says, do you want stock or something? Like, no. It says, and then she told me the last person who replaced the light bulb charged $15,000 to do it, to replace a $4 light bulb in something that took less than 20 minutes of time. And like right then and there, they hired me to take care of E.T. after that. And so as a result of that, E.T. and I saw the world together. We would go to England and we would shoot telephone commercials for the British Telephone Company. We would go to New York and shoot commercials for Wendy's. We went to the 1997 Super Bowl and shot commercials for Progressive Insurance. And so I just had this really great time with E.T. over the years, and there's another really fun little story about E.T. I used to keep him in my garage in the San Fernando Valley, and it was not a really great garage, not very secure, and so I would always keep the garage door open so no one could see him. And one day he needed a new paint job, and the paint is made out of really, really nasty chemicals. It's like toluene and methylene. hexane, acetone, rubber cement thinner, and rubber cement and universal pigments, really, really bad stuff. And then you run it through an airbrush, so it's all, you know, in the air. Yeah. And of course, you know, we're really proper. You know, I wear a respirator mask and a suit. But one day it was raining, and I had the garage door mostly closed, and I'm in there spraying ET and giving a new paint job with this toxic stuff, and the fumes are leaking outside. And I get this knock on the door of the garage, like, "Open up, it's the police." And I go, "Okay." So I open the door, and there's two policemen with their guns drawn facing me, and one policeman looks over to the side and says, "Is that E.T.?" And then he withdraws his gun, and I go, "Yeah." And a long story short, the neighbors, from the fumes, they thought I was operating a methane crack lab in my garage, so they called the cops. Long story short, though, one of the cops, he went back home, got his children, came back, and we took pictures of him with E.T.
Of course, that was my favorite
E.T. story.
Listen, when you do your school lessons, what is the first thing that you say to your students? Which is the most important thing to do, to know?
That is so easy. Story. You really need to have a great grasp on your story. Yeah. And as for visual effects, we always need to bear in mind that the visual effects need to serve the story and tell the story and not become the story. So we're not just creating visual effects for pretty pictures and stuff. They need to advance the movie, mm-hmm. And tell the story. And that's one of the things I preach.
So how is the relationship between you and the director of the film when you work on a film?
Yeah, there's
it's pretty.
Yeah, because he's the vision. He's the visionary of the film, and we're all trying to accomplish the director's vision. And that can be really interesting because some directors are come really, really visionary, like James Cameron or Ron Howard, and some are not. And I won't mention those.
But you
go and you do a movie, and like a director who's not a visionary, he'll say, I want you to make me this tin can, and then you go away. You don't know if it's a blue tin can or a metallic tin can, if it's big, little, and so you're just kind of guessing. And then when you show it to them, that's not what I wanted. And when you go to James Cameron, he says, I want a blue tin can that's 15 centimeters in diameter, and right down to the font style. And he'll have drawings for you, and it's really wonderful because here's your perfect blueprint. You know exactly what he's looking for. So any normal person can follow those instructions and deliver him what he wants.
And does it ever happen that you can be a kind of consultant to the director in terms
of absolutely.
What to do and what not to be doing?
Absolutely. The director is always welcome. Film is such a collaborative medium, and it takes so many people to make it. And a lot of people, they will bring good ideas to the table, and it's good to listen to them. And I think both James Cameron and Steven Spielberg are great examples of people who actually listen to these, to what you have to say. And if they think it's a good idea, they'll incorporate it. James Cameron is really funny because what he'll say, if you have a good idea, he'll say, "That's a great idea. I thought of that," which is really funny.
Well, you know, he's a director, so he has to do that.
There was a scene in Jurassic Park that I was using a hand puppet. It was a hand puppet of the raptor. Uh-huh. And by the way, I used Kermit the Frog's voice on the set, so the raptors had Kermit the Frog's voice. So it was like, "Hey, everybody, it's the raptors, and we're coming into the kitchen now." So it was a little less serious. But that scene where the raptor is looking through the little round window in the kitchen and looking in, that was I was particularly inspired. That one of my favorite movies is the movie Alien. And in the end of the movie, Sigourney Weaver is trying to escape from the spaceship with Jonesy the cat inside this little cat carrier. Mm-hmm. And she comes around the corner, and there's the alien. She drops the cat carrier, and she runs away. But then they cut to this really great camera shot where the camera is inside with the cat looking out of its little window at the alien. And the alien's looking in on the cat, and it starts to tilt its head to the right. And when I saw that, I thought, wow, that alien is really intelligent because it's trying to problem solve and it's thinking and it's really neat. And that stayed with me. So when we were doing that porthole window shot,
yeah.
I told the other two guys that I was in the hand puppet. There was another guy who opened and closed the jaw and another guy who did the eyeballs. And I told them, I said, hey, let's do that shot from Alien. And they go, yeah, we'll try. So the raptor goes into the window, and then he faces the window, and he starts to tilt his head.
Oh, I totally remember that.
And, yeah, because it's a great move. And someone in the background says, you're tilting the head. Then Steven Spielberg yells out, it's like Alien. I love it. And that's the take we used.
Just a question about this. Just to make an example, how long it takes to create, like, a puppet or, like, the head of the raptor?
Oh, that was probably...
And how many people are involved?
Well, I think our crew for Jurassic Park was around... pretty close to about 100 people for the puppets and the suits. I know I had about 10 people working inside the mechanical shop that were spread out. There's some of them. There was a team of us working on the raptors, and then there was a great big team of us working on the T-Rex, the full-scale T-Rex, and then there was about two or three people working on the spitter. The spitter dinosaur that's near the end of the movie. And the reason so is the spitter wasn't going to be in very many shots, and also he was scheduled for way, way at the end of the movie, and he was kind of a small puppet, so they had more time to build him and stuff. Okay. So, but while the rest of us were clamoring around trying to build the raptors and the T-Rex.
Well, can you tell us something about Batman?
About Batman?
Yeah. Not well, we know Batman the film, but the film you were...
I can tell you, you've never seen both of us in the same room together. No, just kidding.
They have.
Well, I worked on Batman Returns, and I was in charge. And when I say I'm in charge, I was with a group of like four or five people who are all supervisors. So I was the supervisor of the mechanical department. There's a supervisor of the art department, and on and on. And so we were in charge of building 30... penguin puppets for the movie. And there were three different sizes. There was like a 10-inch size, a 20-inch size, and a 30-inch size. And then there were also a couple of little people in penguin suits as well. And those were actually done by the other coordinator at the shop. His name is Richard Landon. And I was in charge of the little puppets. And we had... It was just one of the biggest numbers of puppeteers ever used in a movie set. We had about 80 puppeteers on the set. Wow. And they were all Screen Actors Guild puppeteers, so wow. And the 30-inch puppets, they were based off of these penguins called Emperor Penguins.
Yeah,
the ones with the cool little orange patch behind their heads.
Yeah.
They're like golden retrievers. They love people. They love you to scratch back behind their ears, or if you can find them. And they're very, very nice. Whereas on the other hand, the little Blackfoot penguins are pure evil. And one day they had 10 real emperor penguins on the set, and we had 10 puppets. And then at the end of the day, they herded the penguins off to the little holding area, and they only had 9. So they came back, and they found out that one of the penguins had snuggled up and was sleeping with our penguins, with the puppets penguins. It was really cute.
Well, I would love to stay to talk to you for like another hour, but we can't.
Oh, okay.
Our time is up, so thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Creator.
It was really fun.
A special effects master and 3D animation master as well. I am Angelo Cerbi for Fred Film Radio, the festival insider from the Venice Festival.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.